Welcome to the Happy as Hell podcast. I'm your host, Gab Ciminelli, and it is a beautiful day out there wherever you're tuning in from. We've got another outrageous episode for you to help you dive into what makes you as happy as hell by getting into some serious TLC. So keep it where you've got it, stop chasing, and start living. All the best action is not out there, folks, but deep down inside of you. And now it's time to tap into the hidden strengths that all humans have. This is the Happy as Hell podcast with Gab Ciminelli. The podcast that is going to help you become an incredible human by getting to the root of fear and the source of happiness.
Now, here's your host, motivational speaker and zero fear coach, Gabriele Gab Ciminelli.
Welcome back to the Happy as Hell podcast, episode number 10. Wow, thank you very much, everybody. It has been an amazing journey so far in season one. We have a couple more episodes left after this. It's the 10th week in a row that I've managed to keep up my conversations with myself, my conversations with you, and your conversations with you. This podcast is very, I guess, unique because what we're trying to do is exclude all of the nonsense out there, and we're trying to take a very objective look at everything. Today, I'm going to question my own profession. The question itself is emotional intelligence a must-have skill, or is it just propaganda? Is emotional intelligence a must-have skill, or is it just propaganda? I really like this question because, as I mentioned, for those who know me, I am a certified emotional intelligence trainer and coach, and to date, I've delivered numerous workshops around the world and used it in various coaching situations. But given recent revelations, I'm actually going to enjoy looking into this because I'm not sure if it's something I actually thoroughly, really understand now that I have a different perspective on things, now that I know how to inquire a little better. So I'm really curious to know, as I question myself, what is emotional intelligence and is it even necessary to train, or are we kind of causing more chaos out of it? Very interesting. I'm not sure how this is going to end up. Now, some of this was originally kind of scripted, but I've decided to put that away. So let's look at this. Now, first of all, let me clarify, this is not a business podcast. And of course, emotional intelligence is one of those business tools these days that people like to train and also in schools. But here we're trying to take a very objective look at things. We're trying to take the time to understand how our very ancient minds have us running around the world creating havoc. And in order to understand our minds, we need to take a look at our minds, not with all the biases and prejudices that we've learned over time, but in a form of meditation. Meditation here meaning to inquire without the interference of noise, right? Without the interruption of judgment, which so naturally occurs, right? Because we are so opinionated, but without looking at it from any of the lenses of any books or scriptures, without any expectations at all, we can't even expect to have a conclusion from our conversation today. That's how free we're going to talk, as if we're friends sitting together, having a nice coffee, and just talking and enjoying each other's company. And I hope that's how we can approach this very wonderful moment ahead. Right. Now, emotional intelligence seems to promote skills that we can train people on to give them a chance to better recognize their own emotions and other people's emotions and use them to guide thinking and behavior. Good grief. All right, now I've taught various forms of emotional intelligence models, but mainly they promote these kind of four areas. two areas are related to intrapersonal skills. For example, self-awareness and self-management. And under these two, there are different competencies, such as being adaptable, learning how to be resilient, what it takes to motivate yourself, how to manage those emotions, and also emotional self-awareness. And then the other two areas are related to interpersonal skills between people. For example, social interaction with others, maintaining relationships, teamwork, empathy, and so forth and so on. Now, it is claimed that emotional intelligence can be trained, and the way I have done it in the past is that self-awareness is usually the starting point to learn emotional intelligence. Self-awareness here implies knowing your internal state, your preferences, your resources, your intuitions. And then the next part of that is self-management, which is about how to manage your internal state, how to manage your impulses, and how to manage those emotions. And of course, after you've done with the internal stuff, you go to the external stuff, all the relationship things, and how to train for empathy, and so forth and so on. So I think before we go into any depth of an EQ lesson here, I'm not going to give you an emotional intelligence lecture. I'd rather just take this very simply. I think we should talk about, why do we have a need to train emotions at all? Why do we have to train about emotions? I think this is a deeper question, it seems. And I'm not sure why we are taking such a complicated approach to actually a very simple thing. But anyway, let's go into this. In emotional intelligence, or EQ, we are training people on how to understand emotions. So one of the questions might be to look very simply at what are emotions and how does the mind process them, shall we? And maybe then we can question, can we know our internal state? What does this mean for self-awareness? What should we know about our internal state or ourself? Now, there's all of that that can come into this. I'm not sure we'll have enough time to cover it all. But I think the first question simply is to look at what emotions are. So, of course, why we need to train emotions, I think, is quite clear that in this world, in business, at home, at school, and everywhere else, people demonstrate I don't like using this term, a darker side. I just basically say people are violent. Not talking about physical violence, but the way they communicate, the way they disrupt things, the way they are separate from each other, from society, from the world. Or they can't communicate effectively. Now, I learned to become a coach very simply because I used to be an engineer. And engineers, in general, have trouble focusing on communication skills and relationship skills. It's just because it's a lot of times a very introverted role. So I wanted to help engineers understand this part, to build good relationships, to share their knowledge, to have that confidence. That was my original want out of this. But, there are different reasons why we need to train emotions, and there were some of them. Other things are like people just don't want to communicate, they don't want to mix with people, or they burst out in anger really quickly when something doesn't go their way, or they're frustrated about something. And then, of course, these emotions, the reaction to these emotions, hurt people, and they affect other people around them. Things don't get accomplished, there's unhappiness, there's uneasiness. Quite simple. So the reason we need to train emotions seems to come from this idea. So we train them on understanding these certain emotions, and when they occur, what do you do about them? So how do you recognize them, and then how do you take action? That's really all it is. Maybe with an element of what motivates people as well to reach their goals. So let's look at what emotions are. What do we mean by emotions? Very interesting question. Probably nobody's going to teach you emotional intelligence the way I do. But I want to question and question and question until we're very clear inside of ourselves. Is emotion a feeling? Is it some kind of reaction to something? Is it something that starts from the body itself? Or does it start from the mind? In other words, is an emotion different from thought? Is an emotion different from thought? Really interesting question, right? We're trying to really get to the bottom of this. So some of you may have experienced something. Let's take a really interesting example. You left the toilet seat up and your spouse or partner gets really annoyed with you because they've asked you to keep it down for years. And in their annoyance, you know, while they're telling you over and over again, you kind of block yourself out and run away if you want to because, you know, you don't think it's that important. And you're just sick and tired of hearing the same thing over and over again. So we have various emotions here coming up. We have annoyance from the person telling you about the seat over and over again. We have frustration from the person who left it up. And maybe some kind of fear by running away from it. So which one shall we choose? Maybe the annoyed person who noticed the seat was left up, you know, because that's the one who's telling the person over and over, please keep it down. Maybe he or she's angry. So is anger an emotion? What happens when we have emotions, when we experience something? But what is the exact point when you notice that emotion arising or when that emotion arises itself? What is that point? We're going to dive into this. When we look at a beautiful flower, is there an emotion? Or are you just in a state of experiencing something? Let's say you look at the flower for the very first time in your life. You've never seen it before. All right. The mind is going to try and record some experience, by the way, because you're having this sensation about something. It means the mind is going to treat this as something completely new, right? And it's going to try and record it. And it's going to put certain words to whatever the experience is. For example, you're going to put a feeling to it. At one point, you're going to say, oh, the flower is, adjective coming, beautiful. Yeah, beautiful. And it makes you feel, perhaps, tranquil. So you can see the mind is connecting some words to the sensation, and it's starting to go into a mode of perception, right? It's perceiving the flower, and in perceiving, it's starting to connect to whatever is already in the memory bank, whatever you've learned in your head, yeah? So that's what's going on, and then, of course, it's connecting it to a feeling and a word, and therefore, you have this emotion. Let's look at something a little bit more serious. My mother passes away. Then I experience some really deep loss. Maybe I have a strong emotion about this. And again, what emotion is commonly labeled here? What is it you're experiencing? What could be that strong emotion? Is it the fear of loneliness? Is it just sorrow? That loss that you don't have anymore? So you go on and you start naming that emotion afterwards. I'm going to a meeting. I know a certain person well. That person enters the room and I feel good. I like this person. Right? It always makes me feel very happy and it's going to be a fun meeting, that kind of thing. So the mind wants to establish a feeling between you and me and then put some kind of name on it because it knows it's a good experience from the past, right? So it's pulling all that information out. This is thought. Creating that, isn't it? Thought is a response of memory, which is simply just a record. So again, is there a difference between feeling and thinking? And it seems quite clear to me that these two are being separated by the mind in order for us to understand or manage them, or for the mind to understand and manage them. So in emotional intelligence, once we have learned to observe the emotion, we then proceed to try and manage them, right? We go on and say, we look for things and we look for ways to manage anger. You know, all kinds of suggestions come up in the classroom, like walk up and down the stairs or take a drink or whatever it is. But my question is, this is, not even a question. It's a more of a realization, right? Because there is no thinker without the thought, right? If you're not thinking, the thought doesn't generate that kind of connection to a feeling, to a word, to an adjective to describe what's happening, to some kind of pleasurable past. Right? If there is no thinker, then there is no thought. There's no thinker without the thought. You have to have a thinker who's having a thought. And so there is no feeling without the feeler. Right? There's no feeling without the feeler. I think we need to go a little bit deeper here to question this. Can we know our internal state, which is part of self-awareness? And for me, this is really personally the only skill you need in understanding emotional intelligence completely. I will come to this part later. Right? But observation. We need to be able to observe in order to be self-aware. So observation is very important. This is the one of the most important, if not the only important skill you need to learn in life. To be able to observe is very important. But we start to fall into a major trap when we start to think about how we observe. That is, the way this is being taught to us is not quite, now that I look at it, resonating with me. For example, in mindfulness meditation, we are told to practice maintaining a state of complete awareness of one's thoughts, emotions, and experiences non-judgmentally. And this is the part I'm struggling with. This is actually a really huge ask, to ask our mind to maintain a state of complete awareness of one's thoughts, emotions, and experiences non-judgmentally. How can we ever be non-judgmental without the interference of our conditioned mind? We are asked to be aware with a mind that is conditioned for centuries upon centuries. And as I stated in episode 3, when I talked about the real beauty of meditation, you can't practice from a source which is conditioned. Therefore, the meditation we are taught is none other than concentration, which is not meditation at all. I went into this. There's a whole episode dedicated to that, so please listen to it if you need to. Then in episode 8, what do I do to end a habit? Now we're talking about practicing here, practicing mindfulness meditation. Already we're trying to create a habit here. All right, that's what practice is. But in that episode, we realize that the human mind is always seeking ways to reinforce itself through any habit. And at the same time, we are shrinking our ability as a human by repeating things, by creating practices, by doing habits all the time. We're shrinking ourselves. The brain is so much more capable than sticking to habits to learn how to do things. And we went into that, and we went into how the brain can learn in different ways, not from practice. So, going back to self-awareness, can you just simply observe without a reason or a purpose or a goal or wanting to learn anything or judging or having some expectation about something? Can you just simply observe without all of that? Have you tried it? Because when you do, there is something incredible that happens. Suddenly, there's no more noise from the mind. The moment you interpret something about that observation, then it becomes noise, because now you're observing with that noise. The moment you judge something, the moment you put your opinion on it, the moment you describe it, then noise happens. And now you're observing together with that noise. It's like listening to a radio station with a little bit of buzzing sound in the background. It's not quite clear. So we can see things perfectly clear for what they are when you start observing in complete awareness. And what starts to unveil is consciousness in its own completeness. And nothing gets missed. You see everything. You just start to see the whole structure of everything. You see our sorrow, you see our pain, you see our greed, you see our anger. Of course, you also see our happiness, you see our beliefs, you see our ideologies, our philosophies, everything. You see all of that because the consciousness of everything you know, all the past traditions, looking at the present, looking at science, data, facts, experts saying do this, 5 ways to sleep better, 10 ways to get up better, all of that, laws being passed in that anger people, etc. All of that is our consciousness. Now, when you observe it, you might be taught to watch things. You know, let them pass. Don't engage with certain things. Watch it like a cloud. But listen to this sentence. You need to use thought, your mind, to keep reminding yourself, oh, I'm not engaging in that emotion. I'm just watching it. That process of what's happening is that you're still involving thought because you're reminding yourself. It's a function of thought. And you're creating a rule. And you're saying to yourself, I'm not engaging in that. And as a rule, you start to train your brain, which becomes practice and habit. And this is what we're trying to get away from. You're saying that it is not good. Listen to this. You are saying that it is not good or correct to engage in whatever you're observing. And therefore, that is also a judgment. And therefore, a judgment being a movement of thought. And now you've created a lot of noise, another lens through which you now observe, which is total missing the point. So, this is why it's so important to be able to observe in such a way that everything is completely clear. To observe all of our consciousness without any movement of thought. Thought is responsible for putting all of that content in our consciousness together. Now, thought has its own needs and probably its own benefits in place as far as knowledge is concerned. You know, advancing technology, using thought to help you get from a source and destination, and, you know, managing all of that day-to-day function. But in observation, thought has no place. Zero. The moment you give thought any energy, any action, a place, then struggle, sorrow, pain, anger, all that comes about. The images of you and others come about. What you think of other people, what you think of yourself. So can you observe your consciousness wholly, the whole thing, the total movement of it all? Can you see it all? The way society is structured, the way the world is divided, the illusion of time. This is the greatest part, if it even is part of emotional intelligence. I think anybody can do this. You don't have to label it as anything. Can you observe without any movement of thought that will act as noise when you're observing? That is it. When you, the one who is observing, realizes that whatever you are observing is one and the same. That is, the observer is observing something. The observer is what is being observed. That means, just follow through with me here, that means if you observe frustration, frustration is not out there in the distance. It's not me watching another me who is frustrated. It is you. You are frustrated. Anger is not different from myself. I am anger. I am jealous. I am forgetful. In this understanding, there is no division between the observer and what is being observed. Can you see this? I wonder if you can see this, or are you still separating what is from who is? It is one and the same. Finally, to observe without the observer, the one with all the preconceptions, all the ideas, all the opinions, etc., just to observe. Then you get to see the whole consciousness, everything. It begins to unveil itself without you making a single effort. Which means that in the total observation, there is no noise. There is a silence of it, an emptying, a complete observation of whatever thought has put together, which is our consciousness. You realize that the reality which thought has created is not truth at all. It's total illusion, folks. There is a reality of thought, of consciousness, which is where most of us are living right now. And then there is truth. So I said I would come back to something. What was it? Oh, yes. I said that all you need really is this important skill of observation. Because what is left? Okay, so now let's say you've observed it all, this complete observation. It's unveiled itself. What remains when you observe the total consciousness of thought? What's left? What is there, if there's anything left? So I think we need to talk about the intelligence part. We've talked a lot about emotions. We've talked about self-awareness. We've talked about the skill of observation being maybe the single most component, if it's even part of emotional intelligence. I need to question that too. Observation is something anybody can do. But I think the other part of it is, what is intelligence? And now we need to talk about love and compassion. In emotional intelligence, we talk a lot about empathy when it comes to the interpersonal side of the skills. Empathy. And building social awareness skills, you know, teamwork. But once you're fully aware and can observe the totality of consciousness without the noise, actually nothing else matters. Watch. Let's ask this question. What is compassion? Can you be compassionate if you belong to any organization or religion or group? Or you follow and learn something from a guru, or you believe in some stories or examples from a very ancient book on how to be compassionate? Can we learn to be compassionate from a book? Can we learn to be compassionate from someone who never actually existed in our life that we can't really observe with our own totality, our own heart? It's like trying to learn how to swim from YouTube. You can't really learn because you're not physically there in the pool trying to learn. And there's another thing, of course, getting a little more serious. The moment you believe in some God and you put your entire faith in it, can there be compassion? You might donate money every week or volunteer, do volunteer work to help, you know, the needy in the community. But are you doing that out of some pity or some sympathy for the less fortunate? Or maybe you're feeling charitable. But is this really love and compassion? Is there a way to view the world from the heart without the lenses of the mind? And then perhaps now that we've discovered how the mind associates sensation with some perception, which then thought interprets as some emotion. Now we're perhaps ready to discover that all we really need is intelligence. Not emotional intelligence, but intelligence, which is a complete realization of what love really is. Now be careful. This intelligence has nothing to do whatsoever with anything that thought generates, nothing to do with knowledge, nothing to do with the way you've learned love from a book or love from a story. This intelligence is not related to being clever or whether you become successful or do a great job at something or you're a great cook or musician. It is not this type of intelligence. In this intelligence, in this understanding of intelligence where you're observing completely without noise. Love and compassion does not belong to any single human being or some special human or only certain people. Where this understanding of intelligence is, there is no division between you and me. None at all. No division at all between what is and what is. It is infinite abundance. But you won't see this intelligence because most of us are just concerned with doing our own things. Our own version of intelligence seems to be very individual, isn't it? It's very competitive, very success-oriented, aggressive, violent. I want this, I want a house, I want a family, I want to retire rich. It's destroying humanity. And it seems to me that the more of the world is educated, the more we analyze, the more opinionated we are, has led to a less happier world we have created, and more complicated problems we have to deal with. It's becoming very dangerous. But the intelligence we are talking about has a quality that is out of this world, because it's not generated by thought. It's completely free of noise, and therefore it is complete freedom. Without this complete freedom of noise, you cannot discover this intelligence. But if you've really understood with your heart, not with intellect, then you are intelligent. So thank you for staying tuned in to another episode. Remember that the world is a mirror and you are the world. So if you don't like what you see out there, change the inside. I can't wait to talk to you again. Arrivederci, amici.